Women have far scarier nightmares than men, dreams so intense we can describe them in terrifying detail when we jolt awake. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you how sleep experts explain this in a moment.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
A giant monster is gaining on you. Its jaws are opening. You see its fangs, then bam, you're awake. Phew, not to worry. You just had one of those Friday the 13th nightmares again. Nightmares, everybody gets them. But one study in England finds that women have twice as many terrifying dreams as men. Why the disparity? Scientists say it's because women have trouble switching off emotions when they go to bed. For them, dreaming is a subconscious way to prepare for bad stuff ahead. So guys, the next time your wife wakes up in a cold sweat, cut her some slack. A little extra TLC might be in order. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht. More news and information at KatherineAlbrecht.com. Finally, some nuclear news to cheer. The most powerful weapon in our atomic arsenal has been dismantled. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you about the last days of a frightening bomb they called the B-53 in a moment.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Here's news that could make even a cold warrior smile. The aging B-53, the last of our nation's most powerful nuclear bombs, has been quietly taken apart at a plant near Amarillo, Texas. Dating way back to 1962, the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis, the B-53 was the size of a minivan and weighed 10,000 pounds. This ancient nuke was 600 times more powerful than the one dropped on Hiroshima, which killed at least 140,000 people. Now the biggest nuke we've got is the B-83, a similar killer now pushing 30 years old. Will it take us half a century to retire that one? Let's hope not. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht. More news and information at KatherineAlbrecht.com.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. And in the second hour of today's show, I'm going to continue with the theme of psychiatry. And since I don't actually have any guests for today's show, I'm going to bring you an audio clip from a lecture, actually a couple of different lectures, by one of the great figures in modern psychiatry, from an enlightened and a skeptical position. The man is Thomas Szasz, a psychiatrist and greatly respected in his profession, who actually died last year at the age of 92. And I'll just give you a bit of background here. Dr. Thomas Szasz, who died at the age of 92 in September of 2012, was an indefatigable critic of conventional psychiatry, maintaining that it often offended against human dignity and infringed the rights of the individual. And this is an article from telegraph.co.uk. Thomas Szasz argued that the concept of mental illness was little more than a metaphor without any pathological referent. That is, it was not based on evidence of disease or other organic malfunction. In an interview in 1969, he said, "When metaphor is mistaken for reality and is then used for social purposes, then we have the makings of myth. I hold that the concepts of mental health and mental illness are mythological concepts used strategically to advance some social interests and to retard others, much as national and religious myths have been used in the past. In one of his books, The Manufacture of Madness, he compared the 20th century tendency to define aberrant behaviour as mental illness to the 17th century practice of accusing nonconformists of witchcraft. His seminal work, The Myth of Mental Illness, Foundations of a Theory of Personal Conduct, was reprinted many times. Now, the work of Thomas Zatz is widely known, and the fact that he was a skeptic of the mainstream psychiatric industry is widely known. But what is interesting is that Thomas Zatz was also a very strong advocate of libertarianism, and his critiques of psychiatry extend to a critique of the whole field of medicine, and particularly of socialized medicine. And what I want to bring you today is, firstly, a clip from a lecture he gave, which is titled, just bringing it up now, Socialism in Healthcare. And this is actually a really deep look into the whole concept of mass medical treatment, and basically the concept that people need to be treated. Thomas Zatz argues that people don't, in fact, need to be treated. This is actually a choice. And he provides some really excellent examples of how and why that is the case, which I have not encountered before. And I do find this an extremely valuable lecture. And after that, I will be playing another clip from a lecture in which he gets into the question of people's right to basically choose what type of drugs they want. And again, his critique of the way in which society sort of manages our access to drugs, telling us that basically all drugs which have some sort of powerful effect are essentially illegal, then you have to go and ask permission, or you have to actually be told by a doctor that this is what you must take. So everything is coercive. Treating the individual as the property of the state. So this is deeply philosophical, deeply critical of the trends of modern society in the US, and certainly as it affects Australia too. So I'll now play the lecture for you, and I'll be playing a clip from another lecture after that, in which he gets into the question of people's right to access any type of drug they want. I mean, people, in his view, should simply be able to buy drugs that they need. Again, this entails a respect for people's basic freedom and basic individuality that is the essence of freedom. Anyway, that's enough from me. I'll now hand you over to Thomas Zatz for the lecture on socialism in medicine.
Now, this year also happens to be the 50th anniversary of the publication of Hayek's The Road to Serfdom. And it seemed to me that I would get started with that watershed, and between the publication of that book and the unraveling of the Soviet Union, we have now come to a situation where, which was in some ways always true in this country, but it is now quite obvious that no respectable individual defends socialism or communism as an effective economic policy. No one will say as whoever it was, Brezhnev, that we will overtake you, we will have better consumer economy than you do. No one says that. But in point of fact, in the United States, going quite far back, for reasons which are historical and cultural and perhaps unknowable, the word socialism has early acquired a negative connotation. So there are very few people who call themselves socialists, much less communists. But they don't have to, because in this country, the notion of protection, particularly protection from destitution and disease, has really replaced the need for socialism. And as I see it, really, the whole health care rhetoric is socialist rhetoric in terms of disease treatment and so forth. Now, I'll be obviously saying much more about that. Now, when we talk about the government taking a role in protecting people from disease, the first thing I want to mention that the very concept of disease is not as simple as it may seem, and its meaning has changed. Now, what is a disease? You might all think you know what a disease is, and of course you do, but you don't. Those of you who think of this in a kind of a personal and down-to-earth way, mainly about yourself, will think that a disease is something, first of all, that you don't want. You rather have without, be without. Secondly, that it is something that happens to you. Something like leukemia, or diabetes, or arthritis. I mean, this is not something that you want. And fourthly, it is something which one can genuinely, philosophically say is not a part of you. In other words, if you have, let's say, tuberculosis or you have a sore throat, now, or for this week, next week, when you haven't got it, you will still be you. It's not a part of you. Now, this is in some ways, the last but not least, there is a scientific dimension of it, which is very important, and which again, you don't have to be a physician or in any way a professional person to realize that modern medicine is relatively recent, going really only back to about the middle, the second half of the 19th century, and depends really on the development of modern medical technology, mainly the autopsy, tissue staining, pathology, and then the more sophisticated techniques of examining the body. So that I have always thought that the analogy between the gold standard in economic affairs and pathological lesions in medicine make a very nice analogy. That is, diseases are not something that doctors make up. It is something that they find, and they typically found it in dead bodies. And how do you know that somebody has a disease, that somebody dies, and the pathologist examine the liver, the kidney, the lungs, and so on, and they find if someone has pulmonary tuberculosis, that their lung looks different from a normal lung, and so on. It's that simple. And sometimes, of course, there are new diseases, like AIDS, legionnaires, and so on, but these are all found by pathologists on people who are, quote, sick in some ways, but the clinical diagnosis is always secondary, is always trimmed by the pathological diagnosis, as it's said in medicine. Now, this was pretty much the case until, certainly even when I went to medical school, which was more than 50 years ago. But this has changed really since then quite rapidly. This was, first of all, not always true. And as I said, I'm not going to be saying much. This was never true of psychiatry, because psychiatrists always were the medical specialists who treated diseases which did not exist, in the sense that pathologists never saw them. Pathologists, going back to psychiatry, pathologists never saw madness. They had pathologists in mental hospitals. They kept looking for diseases. And every once in a while, they did find the diseases historically, the most important example being neurosyphilis. Now, neurosyphilis, as you know, is a pretty bad thing. And if you have neurosyphilis, after a while, you don't act normally, quote. So that causes madness. And then, of course, if pathologists found this, then this became, quote, a disease. Now, one of the things which happens, and I just want to get this out of the way, is that when a pathologist finds a disease, it's no longer a mental disease. Then it's a real disease. It's a brain disease. And neurosyphilis still exists. It's very rare now, after the use of penicillin, but it still exists. But psychiatrists have nothing to do with it. If somebody has neurosyphilis now, it's treated by neurologists or specialists in infectious diseases with antibiotics. It's not a psychiatric disease. Now, the reason why this is important is because from a psychiatric basis, with which you are more or less familiar, In our day, we have developed to a point where diseases are no longer defined by pathologists, but are defined essentially by a political process. And I will illustrate that as I go on, of which, generally speaking, diseases are things which are unwanted behaviors. Now, who are they unwanted by? They may be unwanted by the individual himself, in which case he or she may call it a disease, or they may be unwanted by psychiatrists, or most typically by society, the authorities of the state. Of which the best example, of course, is quote drug abuse, substance abuse. Now the important thing, I'll come back to that. Now one more thing about disease. The entire healthcare debate is premised on an idea which is a wonderful idea, a very simple idea. There's only one thing wrong with it. It is totally fallacious. Now let me tell you what that idea is, and I never see this mentioned. Again, it is something which when I tell you, you will say, well, of course. But I never see this mentioned, and it is absolutely crucial. Now the premise is that diseases require treatment. So the thing to do is avoid diseases so you don't need the treatment, which will then cost a lot of money to everybody, because obviously nobody pays for it anymore. You know, you pay for everybody else's disease except your own disease. So the thing to do is to prevent diseases. Sounds all right?
No. And we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. You're listening to a lecture by Thomas Zaz. Stay with us.
Is a serial hypocrite who lobbied for Freddie Mac before the housing crisis and for the individual mandate before Obamacare. Another, a counterfeit conservative who opposes right to work, massively increased spending, and funded Planned Parenthood. Finally, a flip-flopper who's been on all sides, supported TARP bailouts, and provided the blueprint for Obamacare. Three men. One vision, more big government, more mandates, less freedom. One man stands apart, ready to deliver real change, voting against every tax increase and every unbalanced budget every time. A real plan to cut $1 trillion year one and to balance the budget in three. Pro-life, pro-right to work, guided by faith and principle. Ron Paul, the one who will restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Thank you.
with Truth News Radio. And today I'm bringing you some audio clips from a couple of lectures by Thomas Szasz, the late psychiatrist, and very, very influential, very profound, very deeply philosophical. And his critique extends through the critique of the biological psychiatry, the definition of mental illness, the profiteering of the drug industry, but into the deeper question of the freedom of the individual and a deeply libertarian bent within him, which really is an affirmation of the human spirit and a revolutionary understanding of what it means to be human, I believe. So really important information. And I'm really glad that I'm actually bringing it to you, and I'm learning as we go. I hadn't actually come across these lectures, but his name has been popping up, and I did my research, and now I'm handing it over to you for more analysis. So without further ado, I'll continue with the lecture by Thomas Szasz.
No, diseases don't require treatment. Diseases, that's why I define them, diseases are natural events, like oil in the ground. It's a phenomenon, cancer of the colon. Now, oil in the ground doesn't need extracting. People want it extracted, assuming they have some use for it. So diseases don't require treatment. Some people want their diseases treated. Okay? And some people don't want their diseases treated. Now, you hear about how people shouldn't smoke, for example, and I'll come back to that, because it will cost a great deal of money to treat it. Therefore, if you get lung cancer, I will have to pay for it, so you shouldn't smoke. Well, this has a certain rationale to it, given this socialist premise. There's only one thing wrong with it. There are all kinds of people with all kinds of diseases who don't want treatment. The relationship between disease and treatment is arbitrary, is not logically, if one, then the other. A lot of people with diseases want treatment. A lot of people without any diseases want treatment. Used to be called hypochondriasis. Conversely, a lot of people with diseases don't want treatment. Now, who are some of the people with diseases who don't want treatment? Well, there are two huge groups. I could spend maybe, you know, we are gaining an hour tonight, so maybe I should spend that extra hour talking to you. But one large group are called Christian Scientists. Now, when you hear about smokers being penalized for causing extra healthcare costs, do you ever hear about Christian Scientists being exempted from certain taxes because they don't utilize healthcare costs at all? Right? You're a Christian Scientist, doesn't cost you anything. You're a taxpayer, doesn't cost anything. Now, the other group, and I will perhaps say more about that, are so-called crazy people. Now, they don't, their cost, their healthcare cost is astronomical as things now stand. But in point of fact, they have a characteristic, and that is they don't want any treatment at all. I am talking about really mad people. When I talk about psychiatry, by the way, I should clarify it. I'm not talking about psychoanalysis, counseling. To me, psychiatry is one of two things, which is the way it was born and which is its backbone. It is locking up innocent people, called civil commitment, and excusing guilty people, called the insanity defense. That's what psychiatry is. In both cases, nowadays, generally, you get locked up. Keep in mind someone like Hinckley. Hinckley did not say, I was sick. Hinckley wanted to plead guilty. Other people said he is sick. They are still treating him. They are working on his schizophrenia. Now, you see, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. But nobody believes that. I think modern societies, especially this country, run on hypocrisy. Nobody believes any of this. Nobody believes that the war on drug works and so on, but there are reasons why this goes on. Now, the other group of people are, quotes, crazy people, who in current parlance, deeper goal parlance, suffer from denial. They are in denial. Now, what does that mean in denial? Denial means I don't want to see a doctor. Well, you would have thought this is a constitutional right. You don't have to see anybody you don't want to see. But no, if you don't want to see a doctor, then you certainly have to see a doctor. And that's going to be very expensive. So there are there are two ways in which healthcare costs are incurred, that you are asking for it, or that somebody else says you have to get some healthcare. And that's then going to cost money. Now, I prepared a fairly elaborate paper, but everybody tells me that I shouldn't read a paper. So I'm not going to do that, but I do have some quotes which I do want to use. Now, Mises correctly told us, and he was one of the first to really ride this point, it became one of his hobby horses, it seems to me, that one cannot make rational economic calculations in a socialist economy. That's pretty obvious that, you know, how do you know what people want when they don't have it? They can't see, I don't want this kind of raincoat, I want that kind of button, and so on, and somebody else tells you what there will be on the market. Now, if ever this was true of consumer goods, it seems to me that this is doubly true of medical services. Because there's absolutely no way of telling what kind of medical services the American people want. This, again, is so large a subject that I'm just going to do a very short shrift of it. First of all, an unknown number, an unknown percentage of people, but I think it's a very large percentage, now go to physicians for the simple reason of getting a prescription for a medicine. Because in point of fact, all drugs, virtually all drugs that any intelligent person wants and needs are illegal. All of them. The only drugs which are not illegal, completely illegal, are the so-called over-the-counter drugs. But every effective drug, for example, if you have a bad sore throat and if you have sinusitis, you want an antibiotic, that's illegal. If you have to go to a doctor to get a prescription, that to me is analogous to having to go in the old days to some Soviet bureaucrats and having to get a permission to leave the country. Now you could say you have a right to leave the country. Well, of course, if mama and papa give you permission to leave it. Now you have access to this drug provided you produce the right kind of symptoms. So you have to lie and say what it is that you want. Now the best example of which is the disease, here is a disease, which is probably one of the most frequently used, I understand the most frequent drug is Zantac, is anti-acid drug and so on. But in older days, and even now, these drugs are high on the list, is for a disease called insomnia. Now, it's one of the rules of medical licensure and medical practice in every state that a physician is not permitted to prescribe a drug, prescription drug, for a patient unless that patient is his personal patient, unless he has examined the patient and therefore made a diagnosis that this is a drug required. Now, how does a physician make a diagnosis of insomnia? Here is this busy executive or housewife or whoever who has an appointment for 2 p.m. comes at 1:45, already, you know, has to sacrifice all kinds of other things he wants to do, in the physician's office. Maybe at 3:15 the physician will see him, by which time the physician is all worked up with a heavy schedule and the patient is all worked up. Now how is the physician going to determine that this patient can't sleep? Then he goes home at 10 o'clock at night. It's a charade. But then you can get a prescription drug. Now in the good old days you could get barbiturates. Now, of course, you can no longer get barbiturates, because barbiturates are very useful besides sleeping. For one night, you can sleep forever. And that...
We're just heading to break. You're with Truth News Radio. Don't go away. More from Thomas Azaz after the break.
Oklahoma City, 1995, will change forever the way you look at the true nature of terrorism.
Based on the damage pattern to the building, what the government says is impossible.
The grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say.
The decision was made not to pursue any more of those individuals.
Some of these columns were ripped up, shredded, tossed around.
The people that did the things they did knew doggone well what they were doing.
Expose the cover-up now at InnobleLie.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
It is so enlightening to listen to 90.1 FM, but finding things on the internet isn't so easy, and neither is finding like-minded people to share it with.
Oh, well, I guess you haven't heard of Brave New Books then.
Brave New Books?
Yes, Brave New Books has all the books and DVDs you're looking for by authors like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, and G. Edward Griffin. They even stock Interfood, Berkey products, and Calbin soaps.
There's no way a place like that exists.
Go check it out for yourself. It's downtown at 1904 Guadalupe Street, just south of UT.
By UT? There's never anywhere to park down there.
Actually, they now offer a free hour of parking for paying customers at the 500 MLK parking facility, just behind the bookstore.
It does exist. But when are they open?
Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 1 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. So give them a call at 512-480-2503 or check out their events page at bravenewbookstore.com.
Live Free Speech Radio, LogosRadioNetwork.com.
To Truth News, and I'm bringing you today a lecture by Thomas Szasz on the relationship between socialism and healthcare, the socialization of the healthcare industry, which you might properly term the sickness industry. Some really, really interesting analysis in this talk, and then I will be moving to a second lecture that he gave. And this was all fairly recent, not long before he died. And for a man of 90 plus, he's an incredibly astute, incredibly sharp public speaker. The second lecture is in relation to a book that he wrote about the right to drugs, the right of people to access whatever drugs they need. So do stay with us. It's going to be a really interesting a half hour coming up.
Again, this is for this audience. I mean, I'm carrying some of his course to Newcastle. It's obvious that unless there was some other kind of arrangement, particularly complete access to drugs and some very large measure of payment by patients, there would be no way of telling, there's no way of telling now how American citizens want to apportion their income into what is worth or how much is it worth when you're 80 years old to have some bone marrow transplant and this or that, if you have to pay for it, as compared to something else that you could do for your family and so on. Well, now that you don't have to pay for it, of course, this is a real seduction. I mean, go for it, because in some ways everybody feels, well, at least I can, you know, can sort of rip off the system. I can get all these things for nothing, all these treatments. Now, actually, let me quote you here something. Belatedly, pathologists, epidemiologists, real doctors, besides psychiatrists, are waking up to this. And here is a typical comment from an article in the New York Times about the problem of what is it that's going on medically in the country, and how you cannot tell what's going on. Belatedly, physicians complain, and I'm quoting now from this article, data from current medical records, insurance claim forms, and pharmacy records are severely biased and therefore all but unusable. Doctors may write in the record or an insurance claim form that they are doing a PSA test, that's a prostate cancer test, because a man has prostate cancer even when he is perfectly healthy. It is impossible to judge the outcomes of a clinical interaction on the basis of the paperwork that is now done. So when physicians, epidemiologists, pathologists will look back 50 years from now at records now, they will have absolutely no way of telling what was going on as compared to 100 years ago or 80 years ago in terms of the incidence of syphilis or tuberculosis and so on. Now actually, all of what I have told you are just symptoms of a general phenomenon that has preoccupied me for pretty nearly 40 years, or ever since I've thought of, you know, went to medical school, perhaps even before, and has of course occurred to other people too. And that is the therapeutization, the transformation of politics into healthcare in general terms. And I discovered a remarkably beautiful statement by the poet, who was of course much more than a poet, Winston Auden, who wrote the following. Now listen carefully, because this really says it in a general way all, and then I will elaborate on it. What is peculiar, and I'm quoting, what is peculiar and novel to our age is that the principal goal of politics in every advanced society is not, strictly speaking, a political one, that is to say, it is not concerned with human beings as persons or citizens, but with human bodies. In all technologically advanced countries today, whatever political label they give themselves, their policies have essentially the same goal: to guarantee to every member of society, as a psychophysical organism, the right to physical and mental health. Now this is now sort of taken as an elementary quote, right, that we have a right, and you know, the World Health Organization, the United Nations has this in its platform and so on. Well, back now to what is health? Well, two of the things which are defined as disease now are what used to be called bad habits. Now, bad habits, now, if they are medical, as I already indicated, are habits which may lead to disease and therefore cost the taxpayer money. Of which the two examples that I will use are smoking and obesity, overeating, whatever that is. But before I come to that, I have to make a comment about how medical costs are now defrayed, paid for, because that's the infrastructure for the problems. The problems are the solution. The solution is to have, quote, health insurance. Now this whole thing, very much like psychiatry, one can't talk about unless one talks, you know, excuse me, even though I do it with an accent, but one has to talk English about it. Now health insurance is not health insurance. First of all, it's illness insurance. And secondly, it's not insurance at all. It's not insurance at all. Because insurance is something which a person buys for something, for an event, for a future event, from which he wants to protect himself, like his house burning down, okay? Therefore, a homeowner's insurance does not pay for fixing the plumbing, repainting the house, or changing the light bulb. Now, if you are on Medicare, like I am, you get a letter from the Medicare system, go and get your flu shot, it won't cost you anything. And so on. So the most trivial things and now paid for. That's not insurance. No insurance can do that. Secondly, what do you think would happen to the homeowner insurance industry if state legislatures compelled every such insurance company to insure homeowners for burning down their own house.
Okay, I'm just going to stop it there. You've been listening to Thomas Zatz talking about socialism and healthcare. And the point he made there about health insurance is extremely important. I think it's just worth stopping to let that sink in. There really is a confusion about the meaning of insurance when it's applied to people's health. So I'll let you ponder that. But meanwhile, I'm going to move on to another lecture that was given around about the same time by Dr. Zatz on the question of your right to drugs. So this one comes with quite a good introduction, which explains a lot about it. So I'll just kick off that audio straight away, and we'll continue with that to the end of the hour. So do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be continuing after the ad break with this lecture till the end of the hour today.
It is a distinct honor to welcome you all here this morning and have the privilege of introducing our keynote speaker, Dr. Thomas Zatz. Dr. Zatz is, in my opinion, certainly one of the most influential psychiatrists in the world today. He's influenced and I think indeed shaped our thoughts about mental disorders and addictive behaviors. His lifelong work has been motivated by a very keen intellect and a passion for his work. Among his most important works are his well-known Myth of Mental Illness, my personal favorite, Insanity, The Idea and Its Consequences, and his newest book, which I have a copy of here, Our Right to Drugs, The Case for a Free Market. At a conference several years ago, where Dr. Zatz was one of our featured speakers, I said that Dr. Zatz was the superego of psychiatry. I'm not sure that he liked the idea, at least at first. I haven't really changed my mind. He continually reminds us of the limitations and the roots of mental health treatment. His classic book about drug use and drug pushers and oppression, Ceremonial Chemistry, reminds us just how easy it is to oppress and persecute drug users in the name of health and treatment. Dr. Zatz's work stands as a testament to the humane, dignified treatment for consenting patients who are struggling with addiction. Dr. Zatz is Professor Emeritus of Psychiatry at the State University of New York Health Science Center, and he's a defender of liberty and a champion of personal freedom. His work warns us of the significant risks to freedom when society, either for benevolent or malevolent reasons, wants to impose or improve health. Dr. Zatz's work also teaches us that it's very easy to substitute retribution for treatment, to take a phrase from George Valiant. It's a distinct pleasure for me to introduce my colleague and friend, Dr. Thomas Zatz.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning, and if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Murrah Building? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm bringing you a lecture today from Thomas Zaza. This one is titled The Right to Take Drugs, and both of these lectures have been brought to us by libertarianism.org and from the YouTube channel of that name. And I do recommend looking into more of the material on that YouTube channel. So I'll now hand you over to Thomas Zaz, who will be taking us through to the end of the show today.
Dr. Schaefer, Mr. Weddle, ladies and gentlemen, let me first thank Mr. Weddle and the Massachusetts Civil Liberties Union and all the other hosts, sponsors, for inviting me and the honor of asking me to present a keynote address. I appreciate it. Now, I did plan to make some comments. I have written extensively on this subject, and so I thought I would speak informally, just from some notes. And let me begin by saying that although some of you may not believe this, I am not really interested in the conventional sense in either the criminalization or the legalization of drugs, as these terms are now used. I'm interested in why we are now treating this particular subject in this particular way, given the fact that this country, and especially this city and this building, is devoted to studying the relations between the state and the individual. Is devoted to the proposition that in this country, everyone who reaches the age of maturity is presumed to be in a criminal law, innocent until proven guilty, and in conventional civil law, competent until proven otherwise. So when you reach 18, you can do all kinds of things which have tremendously harmful consequences of society. And I hope if I point out that the most harmful thing someone can do is to produce a child that he or she is not prepared to take care of. It's far more harmful than smoking marijuana on other people. So what I want to discuss is the way drugs fit into this scheme. Now, second point. Language is all important in this, because in the war on drugs, like in many other moral crusades, the crusaders have seized the vocabulary and are sort of winning before the first shot is fired. Because how can anyone be for drug abuse? How can anyone be for addiction? How can anyone be for cocaine babies? This whole rhetoric, obviously, this is impossible. So the issue is not being for the abuse of drugs, the issue is being for self-responsible behavior. And if we know anything, we know that the more controls are imposed on people from without, the less they will control themselves, and vice versa. Many of Mark Twain's wonderful stories are devoted to this subject. If you treat children, adolescents, as if they were responsible,
they will act responsibly. If you treat them as if they were irresponsible, they will act irresponsibly. Now let's take an example here of a subject which may seem completely unrelated. One of the most dangerous implements in our society is the automobile. I believe the figure that's usually given is that 50,000 people get killed every year by cars. Now, I don't know how many of those kill themselves, and how many of those, I don't know if these figures exist, I don't remember them, if they do. And how many are killed, so to speak, innocent people run down by drunken drivers, or simply by people who may be on some other medicine or don't know how to drive like this, or are too old to drive, perhaps, like this elderly woman who ran down 20 people in New York a week or so ago. Cars are dangerous things. Yet we allow them. They are not regulated. They are regulated in the sense that you have to have a driver's license. If you drink and drive, you get punished. Now, of course, you don't get punished nearly enough in this country as compared to other countries. So that's how we regulate automobiles. Now, it seems to me rather strange that why don't we regulate other things in the same way. Now, let's get to drugs. My main objection to the present discourse on drugs is that it is medically oriented. And my objection here is two-pronged. One is that one of the problems in the war on drugs and in the whole, our whole attitude towards drugs is that since approximately 1914, the Harrison-Narcotic Act is a kind of a watershed mark, but since approximately that time, there has been a steady the increasing medical monopolization of drugs, so that medicine, the medical profession and the government are in alliance in a paternalistic way telling people what they can take and what they can't take. And this is epitomized, symbolized by the distinction between prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs. Now, the hypocrisy and idiocy that this has given rise to is all around us in advertising, and I don't want to waste my precious time here to give you too many examples, but you know it's now quite popular to advertise drugs like Dimetaps, I think are advertised constantly on television, which says if it was any more powerful, you would need a prescription. Which means your little kiddies, you know, you can have it because, you know, it's not that bad, but if it was any stronger, you would need your governess, doctor, government to tell you that you can have it. Then there are all these drugs which, like Motrin or Benadryl, which you can get in a certain strength with over-the-counter, but in a greater strength only by prescription. Well, all you have to do is take two Benadryls and then you're up to the prescription strength. Now, this to me is crucial because I don't see, and I am not really trying to pick a disagreement with my friends and colleagues who are trying to combat this this holy war on drugs by trying to medicalize various drugs, by trying to point out their medical value, but I think that's quite hopeless because I don't see how the illegal drugs can be made available essentially in like over-the-counter drugs or in local food market, while completely harmless drugs, like harmless in the sense that they don't do any harm except they might possibly give you some problems with yeast infection or some other medical problem yourself, that you might want be quite capable of using intelligently, remain illegal. Now, to me, it isn't just heroin and marijuana that are illegal. Every drug in America that's any good is illegal. Because if you have to go to a doctor to get a prescription, to get a drug, ladies and gentlemen, that's illegal. And the American people have forgotten this. Because we all get drugs now, like the people in Russia had to get their permission to immigrate. Now, if you had to get a government permission to immigrate, we didn't consider that to be free immigration. For 20 years, various American governments agitated against the Soviet system to let people out, which means that the government can't ask you at the border, why are you leaving? I live in Syracuse, which is only an hour away from Canada. And perhaps because I was born in Hungary, I'm always very struck that when you go drive up to north, on the American side, there is nobody. You drive across the bridge, it's on the Canadian side that they ask you, good morning, what are you doing? Nobody in America is asking you, why do you want to go to Toronto? Now, why should anybody ask you why you want a drug? I'm coming to one of the most interesting distinctions, which is also basically linguistic, and it's terribly simple. Namely, we as mature Americans are now getting drugs only if we need them. We can't get them because we want them. This, to me, is a quintessence of infantilism. In a capitalist free society, you get something because you want it and you pay for it. It doesn't matter how many cars you have, the dealer doesn't ask you, do you need another one? Or do you need a bigger one? They don't ask you, why do you need a six-cylinder engine? Why is the four is enough? Are you planning to speed? Are you planning to abuse the horsepower of it? Doesn't ask about the dosage of the power. And now we come to another aspect, which is completely neglected, especially by the press, by the media, in relation to the war on drugs. And that is that drugs have only peripherally to do with what is now considered to be their only legitimate parameter, to wit, health. We have now gotten ourselves, we, present company, I hope excluded, we have gotten ourselves into a frame of mind where we think that the only function of drugs is to give it to somebody who is sick to make him healthier, like insulin. Well, do I have to spell it out for you? How wrong this is? Well, I don't know whether I do, but I will. I put on my reading glasses so I don't miss any of them. Well, since time immemorial, people have used drugs for the simple reason to make themselves feel better. Whatever better means. Now, better basically means one of two things generally. Since human beings come in two conditions, awake and asleep. When they are awake, they very often want to fall asleep. And when they are asleep, they very often want to wake up. So depressants and stimulants are as old as mankind. And they have been taken for this, which has nothing to do with health. Uppers and downers, we now call them in a kind of a pejorative way. Then, of course, and I don't want to go into that too much because I am sort of identified with this subject and I just will mention it, there is a religious reason, the strictly religious ceremonial reason, like ceremonial wine in both the Jewish and Christian ceremonies and the ceremonial forbidding of alcohol in Islam. So there you see, this has a religious dimension which we deny or slight at our own peril. Then there is the issue of conviviality, smoking jackets, a whole culture of drinking, smoking, opium dens, and so on.
And unfortunately, that is where we're going to have to leave it for today. We'll have the videos on the website in our show notes. Please check them out. Truth News Radio will be back as usual next week. See you then.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.